You are making history tonight. This is the first legal civil marriage between two men or two women, and that is unique in the world.
Millions and millions of people will look at this and they will see that in the Netherlands it's possible for two men to get the same rights as every other married couple.
I want to say yes, but I could not. I just said yes.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. U.S. top court tackles trans teen toilet rights, Google sees red over Singapore's pink dot restrictions, and a History Month happy anniversary for marriage equality. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Frances O'Brien.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending October 29th, 2016. The U.S. Supreme Court announced on October 28th that it would hear a case involving which public school campus bathroom a female-to-male transgender student can use.
I am fighting this fight because no kid should have to think so hard about performing a basic and private function of being alive. No kid struggling to be accepted and struggling to accept themselves should have to simultaneously battle for the right to use the correct bathroom.
A fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruling ordered the Gloucester County, Virginia School District to let Gavin Grimm use the boys' bathroom. The school board, which is appealing that decision, had instituted a policy requiring students to use bathrooms and locker rooms consistent with their biological genders and ordered students with gender identity issues to use separate private facilities. Because of the school board's appeal, Gavin is still forced to use separate bathrooms and locker rooms on his high school campus and to endure the corresponding humiliation. Through his ACLU lawyers, Grimm said that, "While I'm disappointed that I will have to spend my final school year being singled out and treated differently from every other guy, I will do everything I can to make sure that other transgender students don't have to go through the same experience."
The central issue in the case is the Obama administration's assertion that a 1972 civil rights law that includes banning discrimination on the basis of sex includes gender identity. The Department of Education issued a directive in May specifically warning schools that discriminating against transgender students could cost them federal funds. With the Supreme Court short one justice, because of the refusal by the Republican leadership in the U.S. Senate to consider the president's nominee to replace the departed Antonin Scalia, a 4-4 tie would let the Fourth Circuit Appeals Court ruling in Grimm's favor stand. But it would not set national precedent. The case is expected to be heard early next year.
The LGBT rights group Equality Utah has sued the state's Board of Education over the board's policy banning any discussion of sexual and gender minorities in public school classrooms. The lawsuit was filed in U.S. District Court in Salt Lake City and is the first of its kind in the country. At least seven other states, Alabama, Arizona, Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Texas, have similar no-promo-homo restrictions, which the Utah lawsuit says are violations of First Amendment free speech rights and equal protection rights guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. The National Center for Lesbian Rights brought the suit on behalf of Equality Utah and three public school students and their parents. It claims that enforced silence about LGBT people creates a hostile culture for sexual and gender nonconforming students, putting them at risk for isolation, harassment, and long-term negative impacts on their health and well-being. These laws prevent presentation of accurate information concerning lesbian, gay, and bisexual people in health classes and other classes, the lawsuit contends, even when such information serves important educational purposes while imposing no similar restriction on discussion of heterosexuality. The district court has yet to schedule hearings in the case.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church, launched a new website this week that stresses tolerance for same-sex attraction, and specifically debunks the idea that such attraction can be changed. Many people pray for years and do all they can to be obedient in an effort to reduce same-sex attraction, yet find they are still attracted to the same sex, the website reads. A change in attraction should not be expected or demanded as an outcome by parents or leaders. L. Whitney Clayton, an elder in the church, appears in a welcoming video on the site.
We have given much thought and care to better understanding the experience of same-sex attraction and making sure individuals who feel such attraction and their families feel welcome and part of the great worldwide family that is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We want you to be part of our congregations. You have great talents and abilities to offer God's kingdom on earth, and we recognize the many valuable contributions you make.
The seemingly softer stance, however, does not signal a change in core church doctrine that considers private consensual adult same-gender sex to be a sin and requires same-sex attracted congregants to remain celibate. The attraction itself is not a sin, but acting on it is, the website says. Even though individuals do not choose to have such attractions, they do choose how to respond to them. Mormons who act on their desires can be excommunicated from the church. Last year, a change in policy also declared that children of legally married same-gender couples can't be baptized until they turn 18 and renounce their parents' relationship.
In other news, Google is squaring off with the government of Singapore over sponsorship of the city-state's Pink Dot Festival. The annual event, celebrating LGBT love and equality, has grown by leaps and bounds since 2009 and has attracted sponsorships from several other multinationals, including Facebook, Apple, Twitter, Bloomberg, BP, and Goldman Sachs. In an effort to restrict that support going forward, the Ministry of Home Affairs announced plans soon after this year's Pink Dot in June to require foreign companies and individuals to get a permit to continue their sponsorships. The ministry emphasized in its announcement that the government's position has always been that foreign entities should not interfere in our domestic issues, especially those of a political or controversial nature. Under the new rules, sponsorships are now allowed only by companies incorporated or registered in Singapore and controlled by a majority of Singapore citizens. But a defiant Google issued a statement insisting that, "We will apply for a permit to support Pink Dot in 2017 if required by this new regulation. We hope that these new rules will not limit public discussion on important issues." There's been no word yet from any of the other multinational Pink Dot sponsors.
The British government has blocked a proposal in Parliament to pardon men convicted of violating laws banning private consensual adult gay sex before it was decriminalized in 1967. The bill would have posthumously pardoned thousands of men convicted of offenses under historical anti-gay laws if those acts would be legal today. Surviving men with convictions would have been automatically pardoned. The Turing bill was named after World War II hero Alan Turing, who was convicted in 1952 of gross indecency for having sex with another man. He chose chemical castration over jail time, but committed suicide 2 years later. The story of Turing breaking the Nazis' Enigma Code was dramatized in the Oscar-winning movie The Imitation Game. Turing was pardoned by Queen Elizabeth in 2013. After the royal pardon, a widely supported petition asked that all other men convicted of similar crimes be pardoned as well. But Justice Minister Sam Gyimah filibustered the private member bill in the House of Commons this week because the government feared extending automatic blanket pardons without requiring individual applications could exonerate some people convicted of offenses that are still crimes today.
Liberal Democrat Lord Sharkey is among lawmakers who've been campaigning for the pardons. He told the Australian Broadcasting Company why they're important.
There are about 65,000 men convicted under these now repealed anti-gay laws. 15,000 still alive, the others are dead. Their families suffered. They suffered directly in employment terms. The laws were very cruel and very unjust.
However, Lord Sharkey's government-backed amendment to a policing bill, which is still pending, would require men who were prosecuted for being gay to apply for a pardon. It would automatically clear the names of historic figures. Scottish National Party MP John Nicholson, whose stymied private members bill offered the blanket pardons, warned that under Lord Sharkey's proposal, many men will not open themselves up to the shame and humiliation of applying.
And finally, Tokyo's first ever Comic-Con has gotten off to a shaky start. The organizing committee first banned what's called male crossplay, men dressing as women, considered by many to be the highlights of any Comic-Con, while not banning female cosplay. Other bans include military and police uniforms and exposure of certain body parts. But following global protest, the committee reversed the cosplay ban this week. However, perhaps the so-called bathroom debate in the U.S. has infected Japan. Tokyo Comic-Con organizers are still requiring cosplay visitors to register and get gender-specific ID cards. They'll need to show them upon request at bathrooms and changing rooms. The committee originally feared what one report called the visual terrorism of middle-aged men dressed in girls' school uniforms.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 29th, 2016. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
I'm Stephen Fry. The great Oscar Wilde once said, "The only sin is stupidity." That is why it is imperative that we stay as informed as possible. An excellent way to do this is to listen to This Way Out, the international radio program for all our sexually diverse communities.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. Dad was told by mother, you can't have one without the other.
Belated happy anniversary, Peter and Frank, Ton and Lewis, Helene and Anne-Marie, and Dolphin Geert. We held off for LGBT History Month to honor the 15th anniversary of the world's first legal civil same-gender marriages, which took place in Amsterdam on April 1, 2001. A special parliamentary commission had recommended full marriage equality in 1997, and registered partnerships became available in the Netherlands for both same and opposite gender couples in 1998. In December of 2000, Parliament easily passed the bill opening civil marriage to gays and lesbians, set to go into effect the following April 1st. The International LGBT Community's first wedding day was coincidentally This Way Out's 13th birthday, and just as coincidentally, we'll be distributing our 1,500th program at the end of this year. So it seemed appropriate to end our History Month series by reliving that barrier-shattering event of 15 years ago. The reporter is correspondent Jackie Carver.
It's 11:45 on the 31st of March, 2001. We're in the City Council chamber of the city of Amsterdam waiting for the four happy couples to come upstairs. They came in downstairs just about 10 minutes ago, surrounded by press. And here comes Mayor Job Cohen, the mayor of Amsterdam, who is officiating tonight. The former Minister of Justice, who did so much to push this bill through both houses of Parliament. And here they come. Here comes Geert Kasteel and Rolf Paska, and followed by Helene Fausen and Annemarie Toos, Tom Janssen and Louis Rochmans, and finally Peter Wittebroed-Lemke and Frank Wittebroed. And they're taking their seats, and Mayor Cohen is stepping up to the microphone.
Bruidsparen, familie en vrienden.
Brides and bridegrooms, family and friends, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Amsterdam City Council chamber on this memorable night. We are here to join you in marriage. You are making history tonight. This is the first legal civil marriage between two men or two women, and that is unique in the world. The opening of civil marriage is a milestone in the history of lesbian and gay emancipation. For you, this is a very special moment. Probably the happiest day of your lives, and very likely the longest day of your life as well. And it's a double party. You're celebrating that you're getting married, and you're also celebrating that you can get married. Dear couples, last week when we spoke, you told me what marriage means for you. And you were all very definite in your feeling that a registered partnership is a sort of second-rate marriage. Having a registered partnership is a bit like creating a small business. And for all of you, a marriage is something else, something special, that represents the deepest and most emotional bond that two people can have. And very soon, you will be able to say to each other, "We are married." And that does sound better than "we are partners." You all look wonderful, and I wish you the best April the 1st of your lives. I'd like to go over to the formal part of the ceremony, but it's still 2 minutes to 12, so we'll have to wait a bit. Just keep clapping until midnight.
Mag ik u alle acht verzoeken om te gaan staan en elkaar.
Would you all please stand and take each other by the right hand?
Peter Wittebrood Lemke. Wilt u uw partnerschap met Franciscus Maria Wittebrood omzetten in een huwelijk?
Cohen then asked each couple if they wish to convert their registered partnership into marriage.
Getrouw alle plichten te zullen vervullen die de wet aan de huwelijkse staat verbindt. Peter Wittebrood Lemke.
By the authority vested in me by the civil register of the city of Amsterdam, I declare you to be married.
Dan verklaar ik. Als ambtenaar.
Mayor Cohen then struck the gavel, and with that hammer blow, history was made. Reception afterwards, we all drank a toast. The first one was to the happy couples, and the second one was to history. I spoke first with Ton Jansen. You've been together for 36 years. How does it feel to finally get married?
I'm proud, I must say, although that's really unfair because I didn't do it. There are other people who did it, the politicians or so, but it's wonderful to be here and to set this example to the world. That's what I hope it is. All the world is seeing this, the media all together here. Millions and millions of people will look at this and they will see that in the Netherlands it's possible for two men to get the same rights as every other married couple. That's wonderful.
Do you think that this will offer inspiration to other gays and lesbians throughout the world who are struggling?
Most certainly, most certainly. I think Europe will have to follow this.
I then asked Geert Kasteel how he was feeling.
Well, I'm very proud and very happy.
that I'm married, but it's two parties in one. The first party that I have married my husband, my man, and the second party is that I that is able in Holland that we can marry. The civil marriage opened up, and it's wonderful.
This is a historic day. Do you hope that this is going to be an example for the rest of the world?
Yes, we hope so. But I think it is a fight of many years.
You look absolutely head over heels in love and happy. Tell me, how was it to stand there and say yes?
Say yes. I thought, well, I want to say yes, but I could not... I just said yes.
Yes.
Nervous, yeah.
Congratulations. I then spoke with Peter Wittebrod Lemke and Frank Wittebrod. Tell me why you wanted to get married. What was so important about marriage? I mean, surely that's just a heterosexual institution.
The most important thing is not only the marriage, but the possibility of marriage. And so that is also what we're celebrating tonight. Yes.
And the most important thing is also when you love each other so much like we do and like a lot of people do, then you want to take care of each other. And then you have rights now. So you have rights with heritage, you have rights with pension, you have all the rights like everyone to us with children, you have the rights. And before it wasn't possible to get that rights, and now it's possible. And you have to choose the choice. You can marry or you cannot marry. Normally it was only for the heterosexuals, and now we can choose like the heterosexual. And I suppose in one generation or two generations it's quite normal, like the right for voting. 100 years ago it was only the voting rights for men, as you know, and now everyone knows. It's quite normal that everyone, it's ridiculous that only men can vote. And in 15 years or in 20 years, it's ridiculous that only heterosexuals can marry.
Could marry.
So I hope in a few years they say, it's quite normal.
It's nothing is more normal than
the right for vote and all the other rights.
And how did it feel standing there, knowing that you were among the first gay people to get married legally?
Very romantic.
Yes, that's
nothing
nice.
More romantic.
Yeah, that's good. That's the way that we knew before that it was like this, and we have chosen for it because we want to say all the world from you can do it. And it's okay. Holland is the first land, but maybe Sweden or Norway is the second. So, and that's very good.
We hope we are a good example, and many people follow. It's a day we will not easily forget.
Ineke Hauser is the executive director of the COC, the Dutch lesbian, gay, bi and trans rights group. I asked her how she viewed the night's events.
It's an historic day, and we all are very proud, of course, with this moment and the result of such a long, long fight for justice.
The COC wasn't actually behind this fight at the very beginning. What changed your mind?
Well, there are two different meanings in the COC. And first, the one who said, well, we have to get rid of the marriage, was the strongest. But we more and more realized that it was just a phase in the process, that you have to get equal rights for equal people, and then you can go further on. And that's what we are doing. This is a historic moment, but this is not the end. This is the beginning of the next phase, and that is give way to all kind of other, well, economic and emotional couples, two people, three people living together, not living together, but have the same rights as couples who want to stay in a close relation together and live together. So we are going on.
And is the COC planning to spread the knowledge how Holland went about this and achieved marriage? Are they planning programs to help other countries?
Yes, one of the things we do is that we promote in the European Parliament to get our marriage, as we have it now, recognized in their countries. And I think that is really important to start with.
I caught up with Mayor Cohen and asked him how he was feeling.
I'm very glad that it happened. I'm glad that it came through Parliament, and I'm glad that I had the opportunity and that those first marriages took place here in Amsterdam. It's very important that we have this law here. It's a law for equal handling in the same way, and I think that's very important.
And do you think that this is going to set an example for the rest of the world and that Europe will follow in the footsteps of the Netherlands?
Well, I really hope so. I know by myself that it takes years. I know very well that 10, 15 years ago, when for the first time people said to me, isn't it important that also people of the same sex can marry, I wasn't convinced, not at all. And it took time with me. But now I'm convinced, and I can imagine that also in other countries people can be convinced when they think it over, when they see how important it is that people who want to marry also have the possibility to marry.
And I finally caught up with Henk Krol. He's the editor of the Gay Krant and one of the main proponents of opening up marriage for lesbians and gays, and he was looking just delighted. I asked him if he was feeling as happy as he looked.
Well, I feel incredible. It's unbelievable. And it's the first of April that I'm really happy. 1st of April is my birthday. And I never celebrated my birthday. And now for the first time, I have a party on my birthday.
This is the best present ever.
It is. I'm sure. But it's not a present to me. It's a present to the world.
In Amsterdam, this is Jackie Carden.
Since that day in April 2001, marriage equality has become the law of the land in dozens of countries, states, and territories. Among the most recent have been Greenland, Colombia, Finland, and just last week, the British Overseas Territory of Gibraltar. Unfortunately, the wedding ring remains just out of reach in Australia. To hear how civil marriage equality was achieved in the U.S., check out From Outlaws to In-Laws, a CD-only special This Way Out presentation, available at thiswayout.org. You're listening to This Way Out, brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Francis O'Brien, Wenzel Jones, Stephen Fry, and Jackie Carver contributed program material, with thanks as always to Steve Pride. Frank Sinatra and Paul McCartney performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, who all make this program possible. Check out the latest show information, special offers, and more at thiswayout.org. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KGIG Modesto, California, WLUW Chicago, Illinois, Switch 1197 Brisbane, Queensland, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.